NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, John. It is another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. You and I are kind of flying in a small formation since Todd is off in the wild blue yonder doing something. And of course, Miles O'Brien, who is a regular contributor, who knows where Miles is, what he's digging up right now. So it's just you and me to talk about some things that have transpired recently, not with an aviation accident, but in fact, with a railroad accident. So I'll turn it over to you, let you introduce it, and then we can have a good discussion about it.
So the accident that piqued our interest was East Palestine, Ohio. And it was a railroad accident, had a problem with bearings overheating, and a train derailed. And it was a big deal because of the location, a big fire that they decided to let the hazardous materials burn out. But it was a danger to the town, the citizens in the area, a lot of criticism of the fire chief and others. So it wasn't a very smooth running event around the accident. And apparently at the end of the investigation, after they did the public hearing, the chairman got on and made a really lengthy statement about Norfolk Southern presenting some information at the end of the investigation and denying it. She denied the admission of that information. And I thought that was wrong. And as I started reading it, and when we hooked up finally and started talking about it, you had a little different view. And I tend to agree with your view now after reading the board's rules again. So since you're the one that usually handles all that side of it, I'll let you talk, I'll let you pick up on the board's rules.
One of the things that we enjoy with the National Transportation Safety Board and its process is what's called the party system, where the board can anoint parties with technical expertise, whether that's an organization or an individual, to assist the board in collecting all the facts, conditions, and circumstances regarding a particular event, and using that information to support not only a probable cause finding, but of course, safety recommendations for the enhancement of safety, whether it's aviation, rail, highway, marine, doesn't matter. The fact is that the party system really is a benefit to the board in a multitude of ways. And the investigator in charge really anoints those parties. Now, on the aviation side of the house, the FAA is an automatic party. Therefore, the way the party rules are written on 831.11, the board has the authority through that regulation that says that parties do not have a right to participate in the investigation. And a party being, for an aviation example, an airline or a pilot union or a manufacturer other interested parties, organizations that may have a component part involved or a process involved in the operation of that aircraft. So the board, as the investigator in charge, I when I was with the board, would make the determination outside of the FAA as to who would participate in the investigative process. And the same was happening on the railroad side of the house. And the board allowed Norfolk Southern to be a party to the investigation. But there are rules that the party member or party organization must follow. This isn't optional. And those party rules state that while they are contributing to the investigative process, they can't go off half-cocked and go do their own investigation or do a parallel investigation and withhold information from the NTSB. Anything and everything that is collected during the board's process must be given to the NTSB. For example, if in this case, because the NTSB right now is all over Boeing, if the NTSB has requested information from a party, i.e. Boeing, and Boeing doesn't supply that in a timely manner, and they ask multiple times, that could jeopardize party status because it's evident that Boeing is withholding critical information that the NTSB believes is necessary to ensure that it is thoroughly and methodically investigating an accident. The same with Norfolk Southern. In this case, based on the chairman's statement at the end of the process, she decided that Norfolk Southern wasn't playing by the rules. They had been withholding information. They had been conducting their own investigation and not providing the board with the information. And then all of a sudden providing what is allowed under the board's rules, a party submission of proposed findings and probable cause, as well as actions for enhancing, in this case, railroad safety. This information didn't come out till the very end, and it came in their party submission. It was not provided during the course of the investigation. And the chairman took a hard stand and said, basically, you didn't play by the rules. We're not accepting all of the stuff that you're providing to us, which was, one, well within her purview, but two, it was justified. The point being is that we have a lot of freedoms here in the United States, and through the party process, it provides not only a level of transparency through the board's investigative process, because again, the board doesn't have the authority to go in and throw people in jail and really beat people over the head with a rubber hose to get the information. The board's process is based on volunteerism. And that volunteerism is, we ask a question, we ask for a document, you provide it to us. That is really the substance of the board's process in a grander scale. The problem being is that we really believe that if you are a party to the investigation, you are going to voluntarily provide the information that's requested. And the party system has worked very effectively since the board's inception. Have there been exceptions? Have there been issues? Yes. And now we're seeing that not only with Boeing, because Boeing released information recently about the door issue on the 737 MAX that was outside of the scope of what Boeing could talk about. They actually talked about investigative information, which again, as a party, they cannot do independent of the NTSB, and the NTSB went after them. The chairman has made the same point with Norfolk Southern. It is a privilege to be a party to the investigation, not a right. And she took a firm stand to send a strong message that if we anoint you as a party, here are the rules. You must know the rules. You must familiarize yourself with the rules. And we're going to enforce those rules. And in her statement, she said, we're enforcing these rules. You're not going to play in our sandbox with our rules. Then guess what? We're not going to take whatever you've submitted to us and even consider it. Now, that presents a problem, John, because how critical is that information? Well, of course, Norfolk Southern provided the information to the board. If that information is critical, and it's information that the board didn't have the opportunity to consider as it was writing an analysis or even a probable cause finding, that could present problems. So, again, Norfolk Southern was walking a fine line. Their party status could be revoked. Their party submission could be ignored, if you will, not received by the board. But if it has critical information, that could present other issues. And again, if it was on the aviation side and a party did that, and if I was the investigator in charge working with the board members, we would have to consider how critical is this information to the bottom line. And you've seen this because you worked multimodal as a board member. I was just on the aviation side. And I don't know how, or I should ask you, how would you handle that as a board member if all of a sudden at the 11th hour, you get this submission and you see information that you know staff didn't have when they wrote the draft report? What would you do?
I would push 100% to have that included, because it is information that we didn't have. Doesn't mean we wouldn't make a lot of noise with the party involved, but we couldn't ignore that information. And you wouldn't say submit it in a reconsideration, because it's going to have an impact and you know it already. So yeah, if that were the case, then the NTSB would have to grab that information. It's not clear from what they put out that information added any of that value, additional information value, to this equation. So if it really didn't add any value, then I think she did the right thing. But if there was anything in there that was significant to the outcome of the investigation, then the chairman did not do the right thing.
But I would counter that by saying that, okay, now the board is made aware of this new information at the 11th hour. You turn it over to the investigators and have them run it to ground. You still don't have to accept that submission, but you do have at least the basis for continuing the investigative process to run that information to ground and maybe utilize it in a different form other than them presenting it as their justification as to why they may not have been at fault, because I have a feeling that the information they presented probably shadowed the fact that, you know, hey, it wasn't us, it was them, whoever them is. So I think that the board, now having a basis of knowledge, could send the investigative team back out and go run this to ground and see how critical it is and how supported it is as fact, and does the board need to consider that? The good thing about the party system, and I always found it beneficial to me, not only as the investigator, but to the board, is that whenever you had a party and they provided a submission, it gave the board the opportunity to see the different points of view, the different perspectives, and the different interpretations of the same facts, because you're all collecting the same fact. You're all archiving and artifacting that fact, if you will. Now the question is, how are those facts interpreted? And the board's mission, of course, is to interpret the facts, conditions, and circumstances through an analysis to determine not only the probable cause and the findings themselves, but how those facts are going to translate into safety recommendations that will enhance safety. And I always appreciated that, okay, yeah, ALPA's going to have a perspective because they're going to, their bias is to protect pilots. And the airline is going to have a perspective because their bias is to protect the carrier. And Boeing or Airbus or any of the other manufacturers are going to have a biased perspective. That's great. Give it to me. Why? Because we're interpreting the same facts. I want to see how you're going to interpret those facts and make sure that we as the board have been thorough and methodical in the collection of the facts and properly analyzing those facts. And I always found it a benefit, because I think it made the board's investigative final reports better. Why? Because it ensured that we, as the board, were thorough and methodical in the collection of all the necessary facts. We've considered all the necessary facts. We've discounted those unnecessary facts to support a very logical, reasonable, probable cause. But more importantly, it always served to enhance safety through the recommendation process.
You know, I wonder what the timing was for their submission. Because if they submitted it at the 11th hour, then I would firmly agree with her with, you know, that's playing a game. If they submitted it 2 weeks before when they get the advanced findings, you know, at that final hearing,
yeah.
And if they submitted it then, well, then that's a different ballgame.
Yeah. I mean, because the board, the IIC typically sets the submission date. You know, depending on the complexity of the accident, it could have been 45 days, could be 60 days. It all depends on how lengthy or complex the accident was, because I had set both dates, 45 days and 60 days. And again, it's up to the IIC. But, you know, those are drop dead dates. You hold the parties to those dates. Why? Because the board's process is you got to get those submissions in, you got to review the submissions, and it's not just the IIC, it's typically farmed out through the Office of Aviation Safety to the respective departments so that people can look at all that information, go back and research if necessary, make comments, and determine whether or not there are changes to the draft that need to be made, or does the analysis change because of information from the submission? So you need that time. You cannot just walk in, like you said, at the 11th hour and go, here's our submission, knowing that the board is going to put out a probable cause or a final report basically in 24 hours. It doesn't work that way. And again, if you're not going to play by the rules, the board is very, very authoritative when it comes to, you're playing in our sandbox. These are the rules. They're published. You should understand them as a party. And if you are new to an accident or an incident investigation, you should have an understanding of what those rules are, because you're going to be held to that standard. And of course, it is up to the NTSB IIC to inform the party of those rules and reinforce those rules throughout the process.
Yes. And you know what, as you was talking about understanding the rules, it's the individuals that work for each organization that have to understand the rules. And because in aviation today, because there's been no accidents to speak of, all the people that you and I work with all those years are long gone. We've all retired. They're usually senior people. And so that they're all gone. And the folks that are there today have no institutional knowledge or firsthand knowledge about the process. And I can't remember. It's been a bunch of years since Norfolk Southern's had a big accident. And maybe they're in the same boat as many of the aviation players. They don't have people on staff that understand it. And of course, when a big corporation gets into a pickle like this, who do they call? The lawyers. And again, they're in the same boat too, because there hasn't been a lot of accidents, and we don't let lawyers participate in the NTSB process. So they're on the outside looking in. So now they're at a disadvantage. So you've got a lot of negative things operating on the periphery of this accident. And they clearly should have had some more focused expertise on their side.
I agree.
And they may not have shared what their side was with their outside people either. That's the other point. You know,
and that's the point I was getting.
Yeah, they're doing an internal investigation, right? They may be keeping it all internal and not sharing it with anybody on the outside for fear that if they find something really bad, that it's going to leak out. So they're holding this whole investigation close to the vest, and that's going to lead them into this kind of trouble as well.
And that trouble is that if they did find something in their internal review and they didn't provide it to the board, and the board goes down a path without the knowledge of this new information, it could have an adverse effect on not only the board's interpretation of the facts and determination of cause and findings, but it could result in the basis for an incorrect safety recommendation. So, I mean, it has a lot of ramifications. The one thing that I've noticed, not only when I was with the board, but of course, on the outside now, is that a lot of these organizations operate in a silo, and that the investigative group, whether it's a quality assurance or whatever you want to call it, the flight safety department or whatever it is, they have to be talking to the executive suite, because the executives are out there basically talking about events or talking about findings or trying to CYA a particular issue, especially when it comes to brand imaging and brand protection. And in the case of Boeing, you have an executive who made statements. Now the question is, should that executive have known that the statements they were making were incorrect? Not after the fact, when they finally got hammered, but before they even went out there to make those statements, knowing that the board's process was still current and active, and they should have been talking, hey, can we go out and say this? So their communications department should have been talking to the flight safety department, who's involved in the accident investigation process, going, hey, are we okay to go and talk about this? That's one of the things that I always counsel the airlines and, of course, 135 operators, you know, and 91 operators and everything else. And that is, look, the information about the accident investigation and its process and the details of the findings, that's coming through the NTSB. If somebody asks you a question about how big your organization is and the types of missions that you fly, that's one thing, because that's innocuous. It's basically general information. But as soon as you start talking about, well, your pilots that were involved, were they properly trained? Were they that's investigative information that cannot be released by that party. It all comes through the NTSB. And that has to be emphasized. But also, it has to be trained to these organizations, because no one's immune to an accident or an incident. And while Norfolk Southern or a Boeing or an Airbus or, you know, any of the alphabet airlines out there, you know, aren't having accidents every day, they need to be familiar with the process because of this very thing, because you do jeopardize your party status. And again, the beauty of the party status is instant information through the course of the investigation, so that if change needs to be made, whether it's a policy, a procedure, a manufacturing process, whatever the case may be, at least the party has instant access to the information to effect change now, without waiting a year, 2 years, 3 years, and in some cases, even 4 years until the board gets its investigation completed. The change can be implemented now. That's the beauty of the party system, and parties cannot abuse that privilege.
And you know, I tell people that piece all the time. And when I work for the industry doing investigations, I have seen multiple times where we found something, and in several of those occasions, it was something that had nothing to do with the accident, but we found something that was not correct. And we went right back, and they went back and drove changes, not only within the airline I worked for, but we made a lot of changes on through the entire industry when they discovered what was wrong. And I can remember one, the entire DC-9 MD-80 fleet worldwide was inspected because of one of the findings we had made. And yeah. I don't think it was significant findings down the road, but it was something that you had to go look at to make sure that you didn't have the exact same condition, because it was a latent failure waiting to spring up on somebody. So there's lots of benefits for the party system on that side of the house.
Yeah. And that's why it's important that, you know, the board, not only the board members, in this case, the chairman, but even the IIC, hold the parties, you know, to the letter of the law, if you will, when it comes to these regulations. Look, I ran across this multiple times. I ran across it when I was doing the ATR 72 accident in Roselawn, Indiana, where I had to threaten the FAA. I did it again with US Air 1016 with the FAA. And then I did it again with ValueJet when I had both Sabretech's representative, who was an attorney, Ken Quinn, and the president of ValueJet going at it, you know, in the media. And I counseled them once, I counseled them twice, and I had to threaten them the third time to stop talking because they were talking about things in the investigation that we were releasing carefully in a timed manner. And they were out there trying to protect their particular brand and their client. And it doesn't work that way. And I applaud the chairman for holding their feet to the fire. It has to be done because that preserves the sanctity of the party's system. You let it run amok, you know, there's going to be information that's going to be withheld. And again, because the process works on volunteerism, you have to send a strong message. You provide us this information. Unlike the litigation system where, you know, the board does have subpoena authority and that kind of thing, but it's a little different than in the litigation world. And so there is a lot more information that can be gathered through the litigation process. The board doesn't have that kind of enforcement of power, even as though the FAA, you know, they can revoke certificates. They can take a lot of penalizing action. The board doesn't really have that authority. So the beauty of the party system is we're going to work together. We're going to work together because we need your assistance because you have a higher level of knowledge than we have about certain things. But it's all in the interest of, you know, promoting and enhancing safety. So this is the way it's going to work. And if you're not going to play by those rules, then you know what? You're not going to play, period.
Yep, so, I think she made a good call.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, and again, you don't want parties thinking that they can run over the NTSB. The NTSB has a purpose and a mission, and Congress has given them a lot of authority to complete that purpose and mission, and you cannot have these parties. Again, it's not for the purpose of determining fault as you would for litigation purposes. It's for determining who is responsible and how we're going to fix the problem. So that it doesn't happen again. And in this case, she held their feet to the fire saying, you know what? Yeah, whatever that information was and whatever defense you were going to try and put up through your submission, we're not accepting it.
Yep. Very interesting accident from that point of view. And plus, it's quite devastating on the people of Ohio.
Oh, absolutely. And as we talked in a previous show, John, where now we're getting into the potential for, criminalizing responsible parties in a process that the board conducts. That's a scary thought. But it's not just in aviation. It crosses all the boundaries. And again, how does criminalization have an adverse effect on the board being able to conduct its full mission of collecting all the facts, conditions, and circumstances, since it's a voluntary process. And now you criminalize it, you get people clamming up who you would normally get volunteering information or providing additional assistance to the board. All of a sudden, people are going, well, we're in a criminal lawsuit here, or, you know, we're being sued or whatever, we're being investigated. We're not talking to you. What does that do to the process? Not only for the collection of the information, but of course, the timely collection of the information, again, because it's the timeliness that enhances safety. We cannot let things drag on for months and months and months or even years if there is a safety critical issue that's identified early on in the investigation.
Right. And there must be a lot of that going on in the Justice Department today, because the Attorney General has been sitting on, it might be even 2 weeks, the decision whether or not to prosecute Boeing.
Yes.
And all the prosecutors on the Department of Justice side, all the prosecutors are encouraging him to prosecute. So there must be some pretty strong discussions going on at his level to determine, because the negative impact of that decision is huge.
Yeah. Again, you put the executive, the C-suite executive in jail. Okay, great. That makes people feel good. But what does that do for the technical aspects of the investigation when you're trying to promote safety, enhance safety, identify issues that could jeopardize safety? What does that do for that part of the investigation? Just putting somebody in jail is not going to change the problem, correct the problem. It's not going to change a culture. It's not going to change a process. It's just going to make people feel good emotionally because somebody felt that, they've been held accountable. Okay, but the real problem exists on the manufacturing floor. The real problem exists in a training program. The real problem exists in a process. The real problem exists in a regulation or a non-regulation. That's where things have to be fixed. And if you have an agency that depends on people providing information or providing answers voluntarily to questions, if that doesn't exist any longer, we've jeopardized safety across the board.
Right. I think of two accidents right off the top of my head, TW-800. It led to severe, widespread changes to the wiring system in every airplane, not just Boeing airplanes. And the value jet that you and I worked, we changed the hazardous material rules for the entire world.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, with all of the things that are coming out with regard not only to the Boeing products, but, Airbus is laying low. They do have some issues with their airplanes. But again, that's not to be unexpected. The fact is that they are machines and humans build these machines. And there is always going to be an issue. It is really dependent on humans to go out and conduct the investigation. AI cannot conduct investigations, not now, not in the future. The fact is it takes humans, and it takes the process of accident investigation, incident investigation, to develop these issues. But again, if you're not forthcoming, if there is a barrier to the collection of that information, then that really jeopardizes safety going forward. And again, the fact is that it jeopardizes safety. And I applaud the NTSB and the chairman for taking that firm stand and just saying, look, we're not putting up with this. You're not going to roll us over. You're not going to, try and protect your own brand, if you will. And I guarantee that if Norfolk Southern has another accident in the future, the NTSB is not going to, they're going to be extremely tough on them, and they're going to hawk them throughout the process if they even allow them to be a party.
Yeah, that's another factor to this, that they could withhold them from being a party, which right. I don't think they'll ever do that, but they could do that. I mean, we've had an airline thrown off the investigation because they tampered with the flight data recorder.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yep. So good on the NTSB.
Yes. Yes. All right. I think we've explained it to everybody. And as you were talking with the investigative process, I got to thinking again, I started down this path about going through the investigative process step by step by step. And then we got diverted off with some other activities. And I haven't followed up, I haven't anywhere near finished that. But I think I will start going back to that and lay down an outline. It's probably going to take us maybe 4 to 6 podcasts, because you don't want to put 3-hour podcasts together. But it's probably going to take 4 or 6 of them to go through the airframe and the engines and the flight air traffic control. I mean, the whole piece. Sometimes we've had 20 groups. 20, I think 21 is what most I worked on, groups doing an investigation.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a lot of information that you would have to try to explain to everybody.
Yeah. And then it's even more of an explanation trying to digest. Okay, now you got all this information. What do you do with it? How do you selectively filter it? How do you determine what's relevant, what isn't relevant, and things like that? I'm getting ready to teach an advanced aircraft acts investigation course that I've developed in conjunction with some other folks. And so I'm getting ready to teach that. So again, that'll help form the basis for our discussions on the podcast and between you, myself. We may even get Miles involved from an outside perspective, given the fact that he is press, how they view the process, why they may think it's so slow, it's encumbering. Why don't you guys speed it up? We need to know now. The families need to know now. We need to at least bring that perspective out as to why the process appears to be slow, when in fact, again, the mission of the board is thorough and methodical.
Well, you raise a good point there, because we grew up with a press corps, Don Phillips, Bob Orr.
Yep, Lisa Stark, they're very knowledgeable in aviation.
Right. They were right on top of the game. They knew exactly what to look for and where we were going, in real time.
Yeah,
that doesn't exist there either, right? Age and time has taken care of that. Those guys have all retired and moved on, and there's nobody in the news media that can understand all of this the way those guys did, and girls.
Yeah.
Lisa Stark was very, very sharp on this aviation stuff.
Yeah, so, and Susan Candiotti and a bunch of them. They were a well educated and I'm talking about aviation education. So, they put challenging questions out to board members and to investigators when they were covering these major investigations. And again, I think that served a useful purpose, because it kept the board on the straight and narrow to ensure that their investigations were thorough and methodical, and that these, even if they were a bizarre perspective or some off the wall kind of question, it gave an investigator pause to go, maybe we should just run that to ground and make sure that that doesn't turn into a bonfire. So,
I did a couple of railroad accidents where Don Phillips, who was the aviation writer for the Washington Post, but he was also very much interested in railroads in his personal life. And he had some questions that had all of us squirming. I mean, he understood the system very, very well, and he was sometimes out in front of us with his thinking. And we had to do some catching up to keep up with him. And boy, those can be painful when you're standing there live in front of a wall of cameras, 20, 30 cameras, all looking at you, and you get a tough question from a guy like Don Phillips.
Yeah,
it gets your attention quick.
Yeah, and the benefit with like Miles is the fact that he's a pilot, so he could ask very educated aviation questions because of his knowledge about aviation. So I think it'd be an interesting, one or two or three shows for the audience, because we're gonna have not only the technical perspective, but then you're gonna have that outside perspective that the media and basically the general audience has. Why aren't they asking this question? Why is it taking so long? Why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? So, yeah, I think it'll be a very good, well-rounded type of discussion that we can have. So,
okay. I think we,
So with that, I'm going to leave you with our last word.
And as always, because I've just had a couple of other accidents I've been looking at that played a role right in this pre-planning. I mean, it truly is amazing how many accidents have their start on the ground before the pilot ever get in the airplane. So if you're going to go flying, you must do a good pre-plan session. Do it at home or the hotel. Do it again after you get to the airport. If they don't agree, find out why they don't agree. When you get out to the airplane, do a good pre-flight. On a GA airplanes, I tell everybody, touch your airplane. does a couple of things. You get to know when you're wiggling things, what's normal and what's abnormal, right? But it also focuses your attention. I even tell people that, you know, take a page out of most mechanics. Even in the daylight, we'll walk around with a flashlight. I see them all the time with a flashlight shining into the airplane. Down in, you know, they're not out in the sunlight, but they're down in the shady areas. With, they still didn't need the flashlight, but they shine the flashlight because it focuses their eyes and their attention. Yeah. So you move it around. I mean, these are all little cues. It'll help you find things on a walk around. And if a pilot doesn't know how to do a good walk around, hang around with some maintenance people. Ask them what they do for a walk around. I do a walk around on there, not outside walk around, but I do a visual walk around from the terminal on every airplane I'm getting on, including from the jetway. I'll look at the engines. I'll look at the tires from right out looking down. I'll look down the fuselage. I mean, it's just old habits that won't die. So you need to do a good system check before you get in the air. And after you get in the air, given what's going on in the air today, you got to have that head on a swivel. You got to be looking around. And you can't forget the basics. One of the ones that I wanted to do today, and we'll do it again soon, was carburetor icing in Miami.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, how do you get carburetor icing today? I'm just beside myself when I read these things, beside myself. But that's another story. So if you get out there, put that head on a swivel, and please, please fly safely.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.